Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Deadite Bites, the No Ship Network podcast on the Starz Channel show, Ash versus Evil Dead. This is a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
And I am your host, Em.
And we are covering Season 3, Episode 1, titled Family. Yes, that's right. Ash versus Evil Dead is finally back after being off the air for, what, over a year, really? Because it's supposed to come back in October. And here it is, the ass end of February, and we're finally getting it. So... Yeah, it's been a long wait. Not really the best sign. They haven't re-upped the show yet. That's not really too cool, but nothing is going to be able to take away from how awesome this episode was and how cool it was to have my favorite, my personal favorite show back on the air.
Absence does make the heart grow fonder. I didn't think I could get more fondly towards this show.
But you managed it somehow. You just dug deep down and pulled it out, and you realized how much you missed it and how much of a good show it is. Because I think people, you know, when people ask me, like, what's your favorite show? You do TV show coverage and podcasts as a hobby. Well, Ash versus Evil Dead. And they're like, really? It's better than this show and that show and the other one. It's like, well, to me, because it just hits all those spots. I can't speak for anybody else, but it's just how I feel. But this really hit home and reminded me why it is my favorite show.
We met Dana DeLorenzo this past weekend. I think we should mention that right off the bat.
Yeah. We had a fun time at Pensacon. And if you're not a Patreon member and haven't heard our Patreon podcast and we have not uploaded our official Pensacon podcast, let's let the cat out of the bag right now. We met Dana DeLorenzo at Pensacon 2018, and she is absolutely fabulous, fantastic, awesome. Everything you think she would be, just a bundle of energy, does not stop talking. But at the same time, also one of the sweetest people you'd ever want to meet. And her and Em hit it off on a
Amy Winehouse connection.
Yep, Amy Winehouse connection. And they're BFFs now. So that's the end of that story.
She's really cool to her fans. That was the thing that stood out the most to me, because I've met other celebrities before, and that was the best celebrity encounter I've ever had. This is also the reason why, because of her Q&A we went to, that we know they have not been signed on for Season 4.
Unfortunately.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
So don't download.
Yeah. Yeah, don't. If you can help it, just kind of pay to play, because it's important. You know, so support the arts, support these kinds of things, because it's, I don't know, I'm not trying to single anybody out or saying that anybody's doing it, but I know a lot of people download. And my personal opinion on that is that that stuff's not going to be around to enjoy for very much longer if people don't, you know, pay for it. So this isn't Game of Thrones where people can kind of go, ah, well, one more download's not going to hurt them. They're sitting on the top of the world. This is a pretty small, scrappy show that's very niche, so it needs all the support it can get.
And another thing you can do is wait a few weeks, and if you have Amazon Prime, you can sign up for the Starz app, and then you can binge the show, and then, because it's a 30-day free trial, and then you can turn it off if you don't want it anymore. And not have to pay for it.
Yeah. So you've done it legally, and you've let, you know, maybe Starz can figure it out and go, whoa, maybe all these people look at all the people who signed up right when Ash vs. Evil Dead came out and then didn't re-up. Hopefully they can equate the two and make the connection that people were doing that because they wanted to watch the show. So shall we jump right into the episode?
Yes.
Okay. As I said before, this is Season 3, Episode 1, titled Family. It is written by Mark Verheiden and directed by Mark Beasley. All right, so we start off, and Ash gives a little bit of a preamble about what he used to be and what he did to save Elk Grove, but that's not him now. Now he's the owner of what used to be his dad's hardware store, but is now Ashy Slashy's tools and sex toy emporium, which is utterly ridiculous as a concept, but the commercial is really, really cool. And I've watched this episode 4 times, and I paused it the third time I watched it when I was doing the recap, and I looked, and when he says we have everything from D to dildos.
Ildo. D to Ildo.
Oh, D to Ildo. That's what he said.
I think that's what he said. Yeah.
Well, right behind him, if you pause it, there's a whole rack. There's like a glass case with dildos and vibrators in it. And there's little stickers on there that say sexy cuffs, dildos, and vibrators strictly no returns. So I don't know if you also noticed that before he lets everybody into the store, it says Brock Williams Hardware. And all he bothered to do was put in a line through his dad's name. That's it.
Yeah, there's other areas where he just pasted up his name over Brock's name.
And you at the top of the store where the marquee would be, I guess, or for lack of a better term, it looks like someone took cardboard and painted on it where it says Ashy Slashy Hardware. He's like doing the absolute least to get the job done. It's pretty funny. So this is the grand opening of the store. And he, as everybody's coming in, he's, I felt like there was a little bit of snarky commentary on modern America here. He says, we've got guns, we've got flags, we've got pornography.
I think you're right about that.
You know, with the current state of affairs in America, that hits home. So I thought that's where they were kind of going with that. But,
well, he's kind of like the Colbert version of America. Or of an American. You know what I mean? Like the exaggerated caricature of an American.
I can see that. Yeah. So it fits.
Yeah. I also thought it was interesting that it's a hardware store slash sex store because I think it, in a way, is a representation of him because he's a deadite fighting warrior slash dirtbag. You know, so the duality that's there. But then.
See, we were talking about this off podcast and you were wondering what that meant for his character.
Yeah, because it seems like he's come into his own because he's really owning both of that because he's just brandishing his chainsaw weapon openly now. He's completely coalesced into that.
Well, the people of Elk Grove have allowed him to do that, I guess you could say, because they, you know, the tables have turned for Ash Williams. And he's, since the last episode of the last season, he's accepted for who he is and what he's done. And he's not ashy slashy anymore, but he is. He's accepting it and he's embracing it, like you said. But it's not a derogatory thing now. Now it's something to be proud of. So I think you're right. He's embracing the duality of his nature. And I think that's important because for him to find room in his persona to be a dad too, however good of a dad or bad of a dad he's going to be, it's going to be hilarious to watch. He has to have a little bit more room than just this guy who's running from reality all the time and lives in a trailer with his stack of porno magazines and cheap beer.
So at the end of this season, are we going to see a statue in the center of Elk Grove a la Rocky Balboa?
That would be phenomenal. I would love that. And then when, you know, if there's a season four, when Ash gets, you know, really down and kind of moody about stuff, he can throw his chainsaw at it, just like Rocky threw his helmet at it. It'd be really nice. That's going way deep with the paying the homage to that.
In the commercial, it's a terrible, terrible commercial.
Oh, my God. If I had paid for that commercial, I would have fired everyone around me. I would have been like, just everyone get out. You're done.
But it's like similar as far as like the uninspired impromptu effort that's put into the store was also put into that commercial. So this is just how he does things no matter what. It seems like his whole deadite warrior, it's a lot of it's just luck and then balls. So that also.
Well, it's been the focus of a lot of talk because he's this guy who's just dumb most of the time and he doesn't know what's going on or he doesn't care to know what's going on. We'll say that. But he somehow is able to kick the deadite's ass, maybe because he is the chosen one. And that's what comes along with it. There's a little bit of luck that things are going to get saved in the, you know, at the very last moment.
I think it'd be worth it to take time and pause and look at everything that's in that store. I did notice a couple of things, like how the paint was titled Sticky Gray. That's the color. It was Sticky Gray.
You know, the what does that even mean? Sticky Gray? Like when paint's tacky? I don't know.
Maybe it's the name of some of the stuff that they use for when they're concocting blood and pus and whatever. Maybe it's an inside crew joke or...
It's like FX practical stuff.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, there's some funny moments in the commercial for sure. I mean, the whole thing's funny, but there's some clever ones where she's like, and, you know, talking about ladies, you're going to love his nuts and what's better than his nuts, but a long screw. And some of it's low hanging fruit, but it goes along with the motif of the show. All right. So in our next scene, we have what looks like to be some sort of traveling antique roadshow. I don't know if that's what they're called, but this one is called Treasures from the Loft. And we have Amy, who found the Necronomicon at the end of the last season in the mud, and she brings it to this place. And a man who doesn't get named in the show, but his name is Stanley Gibson, and she wants to get it validated by him. You might remember him as the actor Jeffrey Thomas, who played Bodiatus's father in Spartacus, Gods of the Arena.
Yep.
If you don't recognize him from that, go back and watch, because you're missing out on some great TV, folks. It's awesome. So he's looking at it, and he seems to know what it is, but once again, I guess he doesn't really know what it is, or he wouldn't have done what he did. Kelly, as we see, she's the bouncer in this bar or she's the owner of this bar. I couldn't really tell. I'd like to think she's the owner, but she's acting as the bouncer in this scene at any rate.
I just know she decided not to work for Ash.
Yeah. And given Pablo's lack of a salary at all, I don't blame her, you know. And plus, that was a long time to spend around Ash. She probably needs a little bit of... Kelly seems like an alone time person, right?
Some of the things that Dana DeLorenzo said, yeah.
About where her character's going.
Going with the season, yeah.
It all sounded positive, so...
Yeah.
But it fits with how she's acting. So at any rate, she looks up and she sees this on the television, which is also playing in the television at Ashy Slashy's hardware store, even though Ash is just oblivious to it. She makes a call to an unidentified person, and she basically tells him, evil is back. You were right.
So was she calling that guy?
That's what I assumed. Dalton? Yeah.
The night of Sumeria?
After the second watch, that's who I figured she was calling. Yeah. Dalton. Yeah, the one of the Knights of Sumeria, which...
Elk Grove's bookhouse boy.
Hopefully there's more of them. Hopefully this just isn't a one-man show. Or maybe he's a super badass. I don't know. It could be kind of cool. Throwing in a new character. I like it.
Hey, he's in leather. He's on a motorcycle.
Yeah. All he needs is just a copy of On the Road, and he's good to go.
He's part of an order that's been fighting evil for eons, possibly.
If you don't know, if you're not a listener of Sparkwood & 21, the Bookhouse Boys were characters in that show, and they rode motorcycles and had leather jackets. So we're just throwing that in there.
There's other Twin Peaks polls in this episode, so we have to point that out.
All right. So this Mr. Gibson at Treasures from the Loft reads out loud from the book, and you can probably guess what happened if you're listening to this episode and somehow haven't watched the show already. The evil starts to come up from the Ramelcam view and is coming towards everybody. The wind picks up, starts to howl, stuff is happening. The structure of the actual building they're in starts to get a little bit tentative, we'll say.
I don't know what we speculated on our bonus podcast last season about what we were expecting to happen, because we saw the moment where that book was found and pulled out of the mud.
Yeah.
I would have never, ever, ever speculated this.
No. I mean, we knew that. I wouldn't have either. I'm with you there. I can't say that I saw this happening. But we knew that the book had to be the initiator of, you know, the whole thing starting all over again. But this was a pretty creative way to do it, actually. Because it would have, no, none of them are going to read from it. He already screwed up to start the whole series over in episode, you know, one of season one. So it wasn't going to be him. You know, Kelly or Pablo isn't going to read from the book. So unless you want to have some weird story where somebody just picks it up and starts reading from it, this is probably the best way that I could imagine, even though I didn't really imagine how it would happen. You just knew that evil was going to make a comeback. All right. So meanwhile, at the same time that this is happening, Ash indulges in some sexual innuendo with a customer talking about clamps. And, you know, these are the good ones. They won't stretch or rip or tear like other things. Obviously referencing condoms, which becomes an issue later on in the episode because apparently one of them did break on him. If, in fact, he was using one.
The one that he used 50 times
yeah.
in a row?
Oh, my God. That is just disgusting. Even in a show where blood comes from people's eyes and all kinds of disgusting stuff happens, like what Ruby did and stuff, even with all of that, just that image of somebody using a condom more than once, much less 50 times, and making it his lucky condom, Jesus. So all this happens as the TV behind him goes out, and he gets pissed off because he paid for two more spots. So he's oblivious to the fact that the Necronomicon has been opened and read from, and he's upset because he paid for two more spots. So Pablo is manning the Pablito's fish and chip stand, where you can get food and hard drives, apparently, also. So he's working for Ash in a little side section. I don't know if this is inside of the store or if it's attached to the store or right next to it. I don't know how this is working, but he's not getting paid for it. We do know that. And he feels a familiar pain, and he goes to see what it is, and the book is back. It's the markings and the drawings are on him again, which would freak me the hell out, and it did freak him the hell out. Mm-hmm. So poor Pablo, he's just never going to be free of this affliction.
Nope, not yet. It's interesting to me how he's so connected to Ash, and he continues, I mean, working for him without pay.
I know. The way I picture it is they're staying at Brock's house, Ash's dad's house. So he has whatever food he can eat, hot showers, a place to sleep and hang his hat, and he's just kind of helping out Ash, and then he'll get some money when he can get some money. Who knows? But that seems like a pretty shitty way to live. You know, I'd want a little bit of independence. Be like, nah, I'm going to go get a real job and get my own apartment, and when evil comes knocking, just come grab me. So in Rome, they call her the Demon Woman of Fire. In Greece, They called her the fierce mother from hell. Dana DeLorenzo calls her Lucy Flawless.
Yes.
But in Elk Grove and in TV land, we know her as Ruby. And she's back. And she takes the book. No questions asked. She just smashes his head with one swing of her fist. So this is definitely the blonde Ruby from not the enlightened Ruby that we had for part of last season, who was looking like she could come over to the other side. This is the bad one. So
I did think it was telling, though, when she was saying how she is called Ruby in these benighted times, how possibly the Deadite community feels about their circumstances currently, which they don't necessarily feel like they have the upper hand.
No, they don't. No, they don't. There's a lot more ways that, I mean, the Chosen One is alive and breathing, mm-hmm. for one thing, and is always thwarting their plans, which, you know, they're just bad planners, I guess, because they can't get around Ash. It seems like it wouldn't be that hard to do, but maybe that's one of the qualities you have as the Chosen One. I suppose it is. But also, there's a lot more weaponry now. When people just had bows and arrows and swords and catapults like Army of Darkness, I mean, you could fuck some shit up as a Deadite. Now, people've got shotguns, they've got, you know, all kinds of weaponry that they can bring to bear. Cellos, cymbals. All right, so in the halls of Kenwood County High School, two teenage girls, Brandy and Rachel, are cleaning off locker graffiti that apparently Rachel had put on there about the principal of the school that has a big, giant penis going right towards his mouth, saying that principal sucks.
Is it Principal Perkins?
Yeah, Perkins. Yeah, and I can't help but wondering if It's too early to really have any of that stuff be available because the episode came out yesterday online. But I'm wondering if this is the name of a principal that one of those guys went to school with, you know, Tappert and Ramey or Campbell. So they kind of discuss their graduation plans. We, you know, they're probably 17 going on 18 seniors in high school and they're about to graduate. And one of them, Brandy, wants to get out of Dodge. But her friend, Rachel, she's kind of comfortable where she's at, but she understands why people would want to leave, I think. And
she just doesn't want to be left behind.
Right, right. Yeah. So there's a guy in the Coogie costume, which is the mascot of the high school, who walks by with two cheerleaders. Really, really typical stuff, you know, especially for horror movies. They don't mind having very cardboardy characters. And he says, oh, you missed a spot. They tell him to fuck off and they continue their conversation. Then they see him again at the end of the hall with the mask on or with the full getup on. And little do they know that this Coogie is back as a Deadite. And so they tell him to fuck off, go on his way. Then the lights go out. And this whole scene with the blood coming out of the eyes and spreading out very, very rapidly. And then the lockers going, I feel like there was a homage going on here to just 80s horror in general, late 70s and 80s horror in general, because I could pick out Nightmare on Elm Street because there was a decent number of scenes inside of schools, at least in the first and the third installations of that series. And it would have been cool if the, you know, Coogie would have been like, where's your hall pass or something like that. But that not necessarily cool because it would have been too close to that. But it reminded me a lot of that. That's what it made me think of, especially like Nancy's dream sequences.
We also got to see a little bit of Brandy's metal there for a moment because before the blood and everything, when they were still thinking it was jocks, she was ready to go toe-to-toe where her friend Rachel was like, no, no.
Yeah.
So I think that's important for her to fulfill whatever destiny she probably has being Ash's daughter.
True. That's a good point. She was ready to fight. She was ready to throw down and be like, fuck you. Did you notice their t-shirts? Brandy had said, I'm over it. But it had like a rainbow up top. And then Rachel was wearing a Def Leppard shirt.
Yeah, but it was it looked like it was split. Hmm. Like the colors.
Yeah, it did. It was a weird design. I had never seen it before. Maybe it was like homemade or something. But I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
So the blood pools around them. And eventually they're just on an island of dryness. And they decide to run. And they slip and slide in the nasty slick blood. And they try to run away. But lo and behold, all of the doors are locked. There is Deadite fuckery afoot. So now we're back at the grand opening of the Ashy Slashy store party, and everybody wants to talk with Ash. The people in the crowd, Pablo, who wants to tell him what's going on with his stomach, but you know, Ash thinks he's looking for a raise, and this is where he says, you know, you're not paying me at all right now, which fits. It's ridiculous, but it fits.
And Ash has two cans of PBR turned upside down in his margarita as garnish or
that's absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, And ridiculous.
And ridiculous at the same time. You can't just drink one drink and then go to the next. You got it. Chet is missing out on a great party. You know, RIP Chet. But so the other people who want to talk to him, there's a new guy who we're going to learn later is Dalton, one of the Knights of Samaria. But he's kind of looking from the outside in. And then the other woman who wants to talk to him is his wife. So she pulls him inside and tells him what's going on. And he's like, I'm not your husband. This isn't my daughter. This isn't going on. And she's like, Deadites took your hand. I'll swallow your soul. And he's like, yeah, everybody knows about that. And she's just like, good sex is 30 seconds followed by a cheeseburger. And he's like, oh, okay, I guess we have met before.
She looks so much like Shannon Doherty.
She does. She does. I couldn't put my finger on. She looked familiar to me, and I know I've never seen this actress before. And then when you said that, I was like, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
Okay. She did struggle a little bit to keep her her Kiwi accent from coming out. But sometimes the way she said things reminded me of how Lucy Lawless had said things in Xena. Hmm. There was a couple, mostly when they were in the car, and it was just a few words here and there. But it's the way that certain people with certain accents will try to say words in a, you know, flat American accent. Or non-accent, I guess. I don't know. So she, you know, Pablo comes up and says, look, Jefe, she's telling the truth because here you go. The Sumerian text is back on my stomach. And he's like, dude, I told you get that shit lasered off, which I don't know why that's so funny to me.
It is funny.
Like, it's this dirty secret that they have between them. Like, don't show anybody that. Get that taken care of. Like it's venereal warts or something. So he's convinced to go help her and what is allegedly his daughter, and they get in the car, they get in the Delta, and they're driving, and so we take a little bit of a trip down memory lane, and he's just, this scene is so ridiculous, because she says Branson, and I guess this is a place somewhere where they went. I guess where maybe there's a casino or all-night, like, drive-through marriage type place like they have in Vegas or something like that, because that sparked his memory. And so he's having this flashback of the two of them drinking some liquor, having, you know, sex in a bathroom stall, and then getting married, and then having sex in the back of the Delta. And it looks like, from the way that they were dressed, I mean, Brandy can only be, what, 17, almost 18 years old. So this had to happen in 2000, 2001. So the way that he looked with his facial hair and everything, it's almost like they were cosplaying as actors from My Name is Earl.
Yeah, he did resemble Jason Lee.
Well, if you look at the way. If you look at the his facial hair and stuff like that, because you can't really plausibly try to make them be from the 70s because this is set now. So I was trying to figure that out. I was like, I guess that's how we're going to look back at the early 2000s and how people did their facial hair and stuff. I don't know.
I don't know. That's a good point because that really wasn't a thing. But unless you're Ash Williams.
Right. Because who knows what kind of phases he went through, you know, because it's been 30 years since the whole stuff at the cabin happened. And he's probably gone through a whole bunch of psychological stuff because he never sat down with anybody and talked this out. He just tried to drink it away and smoke it away and screw it away and drive away from it.
Drop the blue shirt for a while.
Yeah, try something else. But he did look like he was dressed up like it was Halloween or something, maybe. I don't know. But that's how Brandy was made. So we have Ruby at what appears to be a hotel room. At least I'm thinking maybe it's an apartment. I don't know. She opens up the Necronomicon to the page with what I'm just going to call Prophecy Ash, which has a lot to do with Army of Darkness, but apparently, at least as far as we know, we were only one episode into the season. We don't know if they actually have rights to do anything with that part of the series still. Mm-hmm. So, but we've talked about that before, so we won't spend too much time on it.
I know I read somewhere that he's saying we just need to quit worrying about Army of Darkness and just be accepting of what we have.
Yeah, I am, honestly. I'm just curious because when you see the, because I don't even really think about Army of Darkness anymore, but when I saw the Prophecy Ash, it really only has to do with that.
Yeah.
Or it generated from that. So I was like, maybe, but either way, I mean, they've done two killer seasons without it. I have no doubt they can do a third. So I'm not hung up on it. So
yeah, I think he said something along the lines like, we shouldn't worry too much about continuity.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. it's the return all over again.
So, you know, trying to figure out what time that Candy and Ash were boning. Maybe we shouldn't worry.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Maybe it was in the late 70s.
Maybe it was 70s night.
Yeah. Yeah. That could be it. So She cuts her hand and bleeds all over the page and smears the blood all over it and then starts eating the blood.
This was so disgusting. I felt the urge to vomit. I didn't quite get to dry heave stage, but it was hovering right there, right below my esophagus area.
Lucy Flawless did this flawlessly. She is a master at her craft. This is no secret to anybody who's ever watched her on a screen. So I'm not dropping a bombshell on you here, people, but she's really good at what she does, and she did this well. And like Em was pointing out off a podcast, Ruby really commits to that, just taking that stiletto knife and shoving it right through her hand. Of course, she's Ruby, so she's going to heal.
Right.
So it gives you a little bit of carte blanche to do stuff like that, but it was a nice visual.
Well, they go above your expectation, because most of the time when you see a scene like that, somebody just usually just slices into their flesh, like for a blood pact or something like that.
Right.
So it's shocking when she stabs herself.
It's a lot more fun, because you don't expect it, and you're like, ooh.
It's a reminder of just how committed she is.
Yeah, she's nothing if not committed. Now, what do you think is in her stomach? Do you think this is going to be the big giant deadite creature that we see in the little thumbnail picture of it? Or is this going to be another creepy kid or what?
I think it's going to be worse. It's going to be because she employed Pablo for the other creepy kids. So this is coming directly from her.
That's a good point.
And this is something she probably did not want to do, understandably, because I'm sorry, she's got a shit job. I would not want that job in the deadite hierarchy. But I guess like when you're evil, you know, all the aspects of your job just suck. That's just, I mean, jobs just suck in general.
Yeah.
But hers especially. So this might be like some sort of like Hail Mary pass, because it was, like I said, it was telling earlier when she was talking about these benighted times. And now she's doing this thing that she was probably trying to avoid doing. That's why she used Pablo. And now she's having to use herself to get the job done.
She's seen everything else that has failed.
Right.
And now she's trying to pick the winning thing, and it's going to suck, but it'll probably be really effective, unfortunately.
It'd be interesting to see if there's some sort of cost to her as well for doing this.
Ooh, that's good. I didn't think about that. Yeah, well, she's already paying that price a little bit just by the nasty-ass ritual and having to actually give birth to whatever this monster's going to be. So now we have Candace, Ash, and Pablo entering the school, and there's a funny little bit of banter between Ash and Pablo, where he's like, yep, this monkey farm still smells the same 30 years later. And Pablo's like, so you really went to school, you know, like that actually happened. Because you could kind of see maybe not, you know. So they stop. So Ash can go over to the trophy case and, you know, it's been 30 years, so he's forgotten where it's all at. But he rattles stuff around a little bit and he drops a Maui Wowie joint out of the bottom of one of those trophies. Now, I don't know how many people out there have ever smoked marijuana, but I'm assuming a decent amount, maybe just trying or whatever. But if you leave weed for way too long, it's not the best. It's not the best at all.
Not to mention the paper.
Yeah, the paper. So it seems really unrealistic that it would still be there. Now, this is a long shot, but while he's looking for that joint, Pablo and Candace are talking about, she's asking Pablo kind of in confidence, like, I don't really know you, but am I barking up the wrong tree by getting this guy to help me? Is this worth my time? And he's like, oh yeah, El Jefe is the best. You know, he's always there, except for that one time I got cut in half. He wasn't there then. But, you know, he did go back in time and save me, and that was really strong. But, you know, it was kind of weird because when I came back, nothing had changed. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to make of that. And mm-hmm. I know they've said, like you mentioned earlier, that don't pay too much of attention to continuity, just sit back and enjoy the fun, gory ride, which I fully intend to do. But it kind of made me think with the state of the joint, its smokeability, and all, you know, the something might be, there might be more time travel stuff coming up, is all.
Or it's an illusion.
Or it's an illusion, yeah. Or we could, I will be pissed off if this is all something that Ball did and he's not really dead, because I feel like that had a good end cap to it.
Right.
So I would rather that not be the case.
I mean, Pablo was right to comment on how he's never seen people get so excited about a hardware store before.
Yeah, something like we talked at length at the last episode, like this is a really weird ending. There's something going on. Somebody's fucking with him, you know, but
it's his fantasy. He's living out this life that
it's all part of his rock and roll fantasy. You know, like the Bad Company song. So it really is. So, but see, nothing has been evil's back, but they didn't pull the rug out from under him yet. It isn't like all of this turned out to just be dust. It's still there, but evil's now back. So we'll see how it works out.
He's being placated for the time being while the Deadites gather their forces back up.
I could totally see that. Yeah, that might be what's going on. So Brandy and Rachel are found in the band room, and Rachel comes out first, and Ash is like, ooh, is she mine? Like he's all proud because she's hot or whatever, even though I think Rachel's actually better looking, or Brandy's actually better looking, but whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. They're both teenagers, you know what I mean? So he's just being his usual goober.
It could have been tried, but it just sounded like lech to me.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. Like, that'd be my dad's reaction. Yeah. If there was a kid that he didn't know he had, and then he'd be like, oh, yeah, she's hot.
It would be.
So anyway, Ash is suspicious that Brandy could be a Deadite. So he kind of pulls her away from the embrace that she has with her mom. And she's like, all right, Mama Bear, you know, let's separate out here because this could be a, what did he say, a bowel-sucking Deadite and not your daughter.
Right.
And then she's like, what's up with the, Brandy's like, what's up with the chainsaw dork or nerd over here or freak, whatever. I forget what she actually said. And then mom is like, well, actually he's, and this was a cool scene because it gives the legitimacy to it. Because if he had to tell her this when mom was dead, it wasn't going to fly. They'd mm-hmm. have to go get the DNA test, which might actually still happen. That'd be a funny way to start the next episode when they're at the doctor's. Well, doc says that you're mine. Or something like that. Because he seems like the type of guy to do. But anyway, he says, yep, that's me. The sperm shooter. And this is my Metal Mike quote of the episode where he says, you can call me dad unless you're a Deadite. Then you can go fuck yourself.
That's when he raised his boomstick or his chainsaw at her. I can't remember which.
Yeah, one of the two. And it's weird that I can't remember which, because I watched this episode 4 times, and each time I laughed out loud involuntarily at that, just yeah. the way it comes out of nowhere and hits you. And then even when you're expecting it, it's just great comedic delivery. So this next scene is really inventive, mm-hmm. I thought. I thought they did an awesome job with Deadite Rachel playing all of these instruments and...
Three Stooges humor.
The Three Stooges humor was rampant, and mm-hmm. it was a real fun counterpoint to all the seriousness that had been going on up to... Actually, it's a little oasis of this goofiness, because then it gets real serious again after that when, you know, Candace dies at the end of the scene or towards the end of the scene. So after all the slapstick and Three Stooges moments that we get, and there's a really cool horn effect here with the instrument. When she blows the horn at them, you can see the wall of sound coming towards yeah. them and pushing them back. And that, I don't think that's anything I've ever seen in a horror flick before. So the neatness, the originality, the cleverness of this scene really, really shines.
Or even, I mean, outside of the Evil Dead world, I don't really see very much of the evil having a sense of humor.
Yeah. Well, it's a crazy chaotic sense of humor, because we always go back to the Three Stooges, and they are paying homage to that in a hefty fashion. But there's also, I think what they're trying to convey is this element of craziness, of literal insanity that the Deadites have, and that they're trying to give to you, to put into your head. So it's not just the terror that they're giving you, but it's like, oh, we're also crazy. So you never know where we're going to come from next. One moment there's like something that's going to literally cut your head off, and the next we're going to be sticking a drumstick up your nose.
Right. When they could just take the opportunity to completely just shove it into his brain, but they just opt to just fuck with him for a minute.
Yeah, yeah, because they could come up with enough force to drive that thing in one ear and out the other, and no more Ash, but, you know, it's not going to happen to him. So after Deadite Rachel decapitates Candace with a cymbal, and the fingers was a nice touch, uh-huh. the fingers coming down, I was like, oh, I knew what happened then, because you can see her in that bare instant, like, lift her hand up to, right. to try to deflect it, but it doesn't work. And if you watch on certain apps after the show, there's a little thing where they show some of the practical effects that they did. And when that actress came in to that day and saw her head, they had done such a good job. She was creeped out. She was like, oh, my God, I've never seen my own head like that before. It gave her the willies because it was done so well.
It is a realistic looking head.
So Ash gets the final word with Deadite Rachel and does a really interesting Deadite kill by smashing the harp over her and just, you know, chopping her face with the cords into a bunch of slices and they all just kind of fall over in a gelatinous mass. Disgusting.
I'm trying to think of octofurcation. I don't know.
Octofurcation. Make up a word.
Octocation.
So after that, there's a little bit of a touching moment where Randy is looking at Ash and she's kind of like, what? You know, she doesn't get to finish her sentence because he says, yeah, I know it sucks. You know, and he's being serious. He's not being his usual flippant self. He's like, I remember my first taste of evil. And before he can say anything else, Coogie rips or punches through the glass and throws him into the hallway. And then the fighting ensues again. And he's so saddened to see his old high school mascot is now a deadite. He's like, oh, Coogie, they got you too. And Coogie's able to handle that chainsaw that Ash has got coming towards him pretty handily. You know, he wasn't going to win out that way. I don't think he had his boomstick on him. So Pablo had to jump into the fray, and then he hits him in the back with the axe, and then he gets tossed too. And Pablo's about to come back with some sort of janitorial implement that he's going to maybe like try to stick in his mouth or in his nose. But who comes to save the day?
Right when I was hoping she would.
Mm-hmm. Kelly Maxwell shows up rocking the leather.
With my Metal Mike quote. Howdy fucking ho, boys. Miss me?
And they did. I thought it was so sweet how Ash looks up and he just cracks this big smile and then laughs a little. He's like, ha ha, my team's here. You know, I'm going to win.
Yeah, because like earlier he was commenting in how it's like old times. Wait, no, it's not. Kelly's not here. And
yeah,
I thought that was touching.
Yeah, he misses her. So I'm looking forward to getting more information. And I'm sure we'll get it about how and why she's not hanging out with the crew. You know, anymore, like what happened exactly. It doesn't seem like they had a falling out because they come back together pretty quickly. I think she just said, well, look, if we're not going to be fighting evil every day of the week, I'm going to go my own way and do my own thing here for a little bit.
I think, yeah, they have a shared agenda.
Mm-hmm.
They want the same thing, but I think she's just doing it her own way, like you just said.
So this guy, Dalton, who's with the Knights of Samaria or the Sumerian Knights, whichever it was. And he's part of an organization that apparently she's now at least affiliated with in some way. So maybe she's been going and doing her own thing, fighting evil.
Yeah, I'm hoping we're going to get some sort of background on her, like a flashback scene at least.
Of what she's been doing in the interim?
Yes.
So that scene, it didn't quite choke me up because it was more of like a fist pump kind of thing.
Yeah.
When she shoots it and its head blows up, which is really in this universe the only real way to kill a deadite and to make sure that they're gone is to take care of the head.
And that was something that they did together, Dalton and her. He shot the can of whatever
the canister
that was.
Of yeah.
And so they work well together probably because they have been for a while.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was saying. Like she has some sort of affiliation with them.
Yeah.
So hopefully, you know, we can find out what they've been doing together, you know, in that time. Like she's doing her own things to fight the evil.
Spinoff.
Yeah. Hey, stranger things have happened.
When he got the joint out of that, what is that called? That
trophy case?
Trophy case. You mentioned how it reminded you of Twin Peaks. We were expecting to see Laura Palmer's picture in there. And it looks a lot like the Twin Peaks display case from the high school.
It does. And I was trying to wonder, like, I don't think it's intentional. I think there's a commonality of all high schools. There's like a generic kind of TV high school look to where how the trophy case looks, how the corridors look. Because I've been to a few different high schools over the years because I grew up in, you know, Dodd schools mostly. So I've been to four or five of them and they all have a different look. So we have this standardized version of what an American high school is supposed to look like. And I think that's part of it is having that trophy case there. And I have seen trophy cases that look similar to that. So it's
have
not
you?
Far-fetched.
I don't recall if I have. I might not have cared about them. So
yeah, you probably just didn't look like care to know or whatever because they're there. Because schools really like to display those things and show off. They're not always centralized in one spot. Like sometimes they'll have some over here and some over in another place or in the library or whatever. So, like we already mentioned, the boy toy, who Ash says, turns out to be Dalton, and he's a member of the Knights of Sumeria. And so Kelly says, who's the kid? And Ash is just like, oh, well, believe it or not, that's my daughter, whose name is Sandy. Mandy. And she's like, Brandy!
And fuck you!
She reminded me of Molly Shannon so much when she did that. She looked she looked and sounded almost exactly like a younger Molly Shannon when she did that. So Ash is glad that the crew's back together. And so he says, Pablo, Kelly, other guy, know, let's do this. And he's like, yeah, all for one, one for all. He's like, no, sorry, that's not going to fly. Pablo, let's hear it with feeling. And he's like, Ghost Beaters. And they go, and that made me feel really good. The ghost, yes. The Ghost Beaters are back.
And I loved how Pablo looked at Kelly with love.
Yeah.
When she was on the scene.
Yep. Like, he doesn't even care that this could possibly be her boyfriend / lover, whatever. You know, he's just glad that she's there, she's with them, and that's his, you know, he's most likely been friend-zoned it a long time ago, but at the same time, there's a level of affection that's more than just friendly to them, because they've been through so much together. And so this is the time, and Ash lights up his Maui Waui joint, and he asks Sandy, air quotes, if she'd like some, and then that's the end of the episode.
It's kind of sweet in a way, because she's the first person he offers the joint to. So he's embracing this daughter of his, trying to make her included into the group. But he says her name wrong.
Yeah. Well, they're just getting to know each other, right? All in all, this was a fantastic way for the season to come back. It sucks that we had to wait so long, but it's here now, so I can stop complaining. And I'm just glad that my favorite TV show is back on the air for me to enjoy for another 10 episodes or so. And it always consistently proves to be the best way that I can spend 30 minutes of my time at any given time.
So. Yeah, it's really, in a way, like the perfect show, because it's so fun. It's pure entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
It plays up to the genre so well, paying homage to various things. And if you're only a little bit versed in that genre, you still get some of it. It's a short episode, and it's easy to rewatch it again immediately after. In fact, you're so compelled to do it again because you want that experience to not end.
Yeah, and you know you missed a couple of the bits of gore. You know you missed a couple of the laughs. You want to pause some stuff, because the first time you just watch it all the way through to get that experience. And I watch it the second time directly afterwards, just go back and watch it over again.
That's exactly what I did.
Yeah, and it's so much fun. You just compelled to do it. Now, I can think of a lot of other shows that I absolutely love that I'm not compelled to go watch the whole 45 minutes over again after I just watched it, because it just feels like, oh, it's too much. I got to give it a little bit of space. Maybe do it the next day or later on that day or whatever have you.
Okay, before we read our feedback, we are going to do some promotion. First off, we want to give a shout out to Bald Move. Recently, we had a spike in our stats on our website due to Bald Move, because they had directed people our way recently. So I wanted to just direct any of you who are into The Walking Dead. They are currently covering The Walking Dead on their Watching Dead podcast. And if you have not checked them out, you should check them out. They're actually my main inspiration for starting No Ship Network. I'm sure a lot of you actually have listened to them. They've
got a big presence in the TV podcasting world. Aside from official shows that are sanctioned by and created by the actual creators of the content, I can't think of, off the top of my head, anybody who's more popular than them. Can you?
Well, there are some that are maybe equally, maybe a little bit more popular, but if their quality, that's debatable. Bald Move is quality coverage. So.
And they're super nice guys. We got to meet them, and M interviewed them a couple years back in Huntsville, Alabama at the Rocket City NerdCon. And, you know, they were fun to have a beer with, fun to just kind of shoot the shit with for a second, very approachable, the whole nine yards. And they've done us a solid in the past as well, because anytime anybody would ask them to cover Vikings, or why don't you cover Vikings, or are you going to cover Vikings, they were kind enough to kick those people our way and say, well, no, we're not going to do that show. But if you head over and check out No Ship Network, they do really good Vikings coverage. And that's a solid thing.
And another podcast I would like to promote would be the Test Pattern Show podcast. This podcast is hosted by Jacob and Tab, and they cover horror movies. And they like to pair things in interesting ways. Like, they have an episode where they discuss The Thing and The Fly, and another episode where they discuss The Bride of Frankenstein and Frankenhooker, among others. They recently talked about things that they were listening to and reading and stuff like that. And the host, Jacob, had been listening to our Deadite Bites podcast and had reviewed us on there. So I wanted to return in kind. So thank you so much for doing that, Jacob. And Steve, I think you're actually prime to start listening to Test Pattern because it's right up your alley.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked a little bit about it on the last Patreon podcast, which we did yesterday. And I'm definitely going to do that.
And their podcast can be found at testpatternshow.com. And Nothing Important Podcast had recently put up a podcast where they have interviewed Bruce Campbell. You can find that at nothingimportantpodcast.podbean.com. And I have yet to listen to it. I actually plan to on my way to work tomorrow. So I will comment a little bit more on that next week. And Steve's mentioned our Patreon podcast a couple of times already. We just started Patreon. If you type in No Ship Network into Patreon, you can find us on there. Our latest episode, we discussed Sasquatch skepticism versus belief, among other things. And our next installment will actually be covering the series, the entire series, Hannibal, because we have been watching that and we're almost done.
And we're going to be putting out, at the very least, two of those a month. That's our bare minimum schedule for those for the Patreon podcast. And that is set up that way to make sure that we're giving enough content for the money that people are giving us so it's worth their money. But and it also keeps us from getting too crazy of a schedule when we have, you know, those certain times where podcasts overlap and you have more than one, which doesn't look like it's going to happen too much this year, thankfully, because last year was fucking crazy with that, which we've already talked about at length elsewhere. But, you know, on sometimes some months when we don't have a show, an active show going on, we may do more, you know, we take advantage of living in the same house and using the studio. So.
All right, for this episode, we have one piece of feedback from Metal Mike, and he says, "What is up, you Deadite Falcons?" "I love the episode. It's been way too long since we saw our crew kicking some ass and dropping one-liners. I'm still a little unclear about what exactly changed in the years before they came back after the time jump, and I was happy to hear Pablo mention that he thought everything was the same. Seems like no one cared, really, like they sort of did in the beginning of last season, but it is the first episode, so I'm sure we'll get our answers. The harp death was awesome, and I'm sure you had some Hannibal PTSD on that slicing. It looked amazing. Great effects. Also, the Sandy, Mandy, and Candy mix-up got the Twin Peaks ears perked up. What a funny way to end the episode." So there's another Twin Peaks pull right there.
I actually asked Em about that not too long before we came into the podcast room to do it. And I was like, "You notice that? The Sandy, Mandy, Candy kind of thing. I feel like I'm having, you know, Twin Peaks flashbacks." And she had mentioned that you had said that in your letter.
Metal Mike says, "The musical fight was fun, but the drumsticks in the ear and nose was the only thing that really hit for me. You might have already discussed some of this stuff, but I wanted to ask a few questions. I am curious on your opinion. Are you surprised Pablo isn't being paid to work for Ash?" "No."
"No, not at all. That seems entirely par for the course."
"Do you think the female employee at Ash's store will be killed? I thought she would have this episode because she was in the commercial and had speaky lines, which usually means you join the crew or die in this show."
Well, she doesn't. On the app that we watch it on, if you pause it, which I pause it frequently when I do recaps for obvious reasons, it shows you the name of the actor who's on the screen at the time, or the four or five of them that are up there. And it had her name, but she was just listed as sexy assistant or sexy counter clerk or sexy clerk or something like that. So I don't know if they're even planning on bringing her back. But if they do, I agree with you. I could see her dying pretty easily in another episode.
Yeah, it's likely she came with the package deal that Ash got from the company that produced his commercial.
So it's really, she's not an employee then, is what you're saying. Like, she's there for the stuff he paid for and the grand opening. And then after that, it's just him and Pablo.
Yes.
And which Pablo is going to be doing all of the work while he runs Pablito's Fish and Chips as well.
Metal Mike asks, "Is Ash having a daughter the thing his dad wanted to tell him in season two? Is it something else, or will that thread be dropped?"
Man, I hadn't thought of that. That's a good pull, Mike.
It's hard to say based on what Dana DeLorenzo said at Pensacon, because they had a completely different storyline planned out.
Yeah, they did.
Initially, because Kelly was going to be revealed as Ash's daughter at some point, but they've dropped that.
Yeah, I don't know if we had talked about that like on a bonus podcast or if we dealt with that at all on air. I can't remember because it's been so long ago now. But there was, when they changed showrunners, there was a lot of stuff that got dropped. But like Em had just mentioned, there was one of the stories was in a convoluted, weird, time jumpy way, Ash was going to be Kelly's actual father. And that got dropped with some other stuff towards the end of season two. That's why it ended like it ended, a little bit differently than everybody had thought. And so who knows what's going to get picked up? They kind of gave themselves a tabula rasa in a way. So it's really unclear. And then with them saying, don't worry too much about continuity, just have fun with the ride. It's very unclear to me, or uncertain to me should be a better way to put it, if they're going to pick up on some of the plot threads that were left dangling with season two.
Metal Mike gives his Metal Mike quote of the week, and he says it goes to Ash with his response to seeing his commercial, perfection and only 22 takes. Take care. Dig it.
Thank you, Metal Mike. And this is the first time we'll thank him on a podcast that non-Patreon listeners are listening to. But thank you once again for getting us into Hannibal.
Yes, thank you.
That was awesome. And we are loving the show. All right, so I am going to add a tiny little section at the end of each one of the episodes of Ash vs. Evil Dead, Deadite Bites this season called Steve's Horror Pick. And what I'm going to do is just real quick, 2 minutes or less, give you a suggestion of something that you might want to watch, read, or listen to that has something directly to do with the horror genre. And this episode's pick is Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things. And this is a 1972 movie that is directed by Bob Clark. And this thing only had a $70,000 budget when it came out. And it's a horror comedy of the zombie variety. So there's a lot of camp. There's a lot of goofiness to it. And some of the jokes don't go so well and everything. But it's worth watching if you're a fan of Ash vs. Evil Dead, because if you like that mixture of comedy and horror, it's worth the time. And if you're a zombie fan in particular, especially the effects part of it, for some reason, this movie really hit the nail on the head for me. I've seen a ton of zombie movies over the decades, and this is one of the handful that have had some zombie effects in there that actually made me kind of like do a double take and go, ooh, that's kind of scary. Even though it's not the scariest movie you're ever going to watch overall. So give it a spin. It's out there on DVD. I haven't seen a DVD of it, so it could be even better looking. I just remember I had a VHS tape of it from years and years ago, but it's called Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things. And that is Steve's Horror Pick of the Week. All right, so join us next week. Same time, same website, and we will cover some more Boomstick and Chainsaw.
All right, this was a No Ship Network podcast. I am your host, Em.
And I'm your host, Steve.
Sleep tight.
Don't let the deadites bite. Boom. Yeah.